All right, so faith. So faith is this first link in this transcendental dependent origination. So we're stepping into a whole new series this year. And faith is an interesting word. We want to try to hold these topics kind of in two ways, at least two ways. One is how the particular link relates to this overall list, but also how it can be a standalone thing. Especially how it helps us connect with our daily lives. Because transcendental origination goes very deep into the pathway of awakening. And so it can get a bit esoteric, a bit subtle. We can also see how it's still applicable even here in our lives with families and work and relationships. Now, faith is an interesting word. It's one of those words that doesn't show up a lot in the Buddhist lists. There's just a couple places, but yet it's a really fundamental part of our practice. And so it's nice to have a chance to highlight it. Some religious traditions, many of them have faith as a real central piece to it. You have to believe in God or believe in heaven, through your actions or through grace or whatever it might be based on the particular religion. And faith is a central piece of it. It's something that's something bigger than us, something that's not readily seen, and there's a kind of act of surrendering and faith into that belief system. Now, other traditions in Buddhism have faith also as a central piece. I mean, Buddhism is a really big territory. There's lots of ways it's practiced. And here in the West and at Seattle Insight, we're practicing a fairly narrow aspect of it. We're practicing it from a Theravadin perspective, but also this westernized Vipassana side of it. And so faith isn't a big word in this tradition, the way it's kind of manifested here. Part of it is there's a lot of, to say bluntly, refugees from other religions. You grew up in religions that maybe were imposed upon you, that felt oppressive, and so there's kind of this rebelling against anything that triggers that. There's also people have different relationships to faith. Some people are really devotional by nature. Some people are more, maybe more less devotional, let's say. So we find our way through this in practice. Now, faith, again, not being a faith-based practice, is one of the things that really resonated with me early on. That I didn't have to believe something; I could actually see it for myself, to see it directly. There's the kind of that famous sutta where this group of villagers are having all these spiritual teachers coming through, sprouting their wisdom, their understanding of what's true, their version of what's sacred. And they conflict with each other, and they ask the Buddha, "What should we really believe?" And the Buddha's advice was to see for yourself, to see directly for your own experience, to kind of weigh it in yourself. And I think that really resonates with us. Especially as Westerners, that kind of, okay, I want to see it directly. Now, some of the suttas, if you read them, they do talk about heavenly realms and all that. But even in that, there's a sutta where the Buddha it's called the Safe Bet Sutta, where these people are talking to him about, okay, should I do good in this world? Should I be ethical? And what's the point of that? Because if I'm ethical, does it mean I go to heaven or not? Is heaven really real? And interestingly, in that sutta, the Buddha doesn't say heaven is true or not. He says that either way, it's actually a good thing to do. Like, if there is a heaven and you practice ethically, you do good. And if there's not a heaven and you act ethically, people will think good of you, and there'll be benefits. So it's a safe bet just to be kind, to be generous. So I appreciate that. He dodges the question and throws us back on how do you actually show up in this world? How you actually act in this world. So I was reflecting on how I hold faith. I was talking to my wife about it, just how, because I'm not a big faith devotional kind of person because of some of that religious, imposed piece, not so much as a child, but later on in life. But yet, she said, you actually do have a lot of faith. You have a lot of optimism, and the optimism that there is this potential for something to go into a better place, to practice in a way, to learn something. And I thought that was a nice reframing of it. Because I think faith, we can think of it as this belief in something that's outside of our experience, that's beyond what we know. It's like this movement into that. There's this potential. And there's this choice to go from what's known to what's not known, to what's unknown. And that's often an act of courage to actually go, because sometimes this experience we're having, this situation, it may be difficult, painful, maybe abusive, but we know it. You know, like we know it. You know, and so was it the phrase, the devil you know versus the devil you don't know, or something like that, or some phrase like that. It's like we know it, so we're more comfortable, even though it's painful. It's like if we were lost at sea and we just had a life preserver that we're holding on for dear life, we knew if we let go of that life preserver, we would drown. But yet someone comes by with a rowboat and says, let go of it, swim over here, and I'll rescue you. But there's a courage to let go of that known protection, that known life preserver, to go in to cross these waters to something that's beyond knowing. So faith is that courage to go across, to leap in there. There's a faith that starts from the first day you practice, because it is kind of a hard sell in our society when we're so used to always being productive and entertaining ourselves and doing things. And when I'm supposed to just sit there and do nothing, I'm supposed to like just be with my breath. You know, where do I engage? What do I do? You know, what about judging? Like those of you who study with Philip Moffitt often talks about the judging, comparing, and fixing mind, and how that's so ingrained in us. It's a habit that we project on the world. And perhaps many of us, if not all of us, have success in that. Maybe we've made a good living by judging things, by fixing things, by comparing things. And then we go on a retreat, and that pattern doesn't have its normal ways of acting. But it still wants to act. So then we start to judge the yogi sitting next to us. Or we judge ourselves for how we compare to that yogi. You know, we start to fix things. We start to compare. Right? So these kind of habits are so ingrained in us. And then we hear the instructions that actually connecting with the moment just how it is, without trying to alter it, that's a leap of faith. That's a trust that actually will do something. Because sometimes every fiber in our being thinks we have to actually be in control, be in charge. And to release that is an act of faith. So you can see that actually faith, even though it's not so emphasized, is almost critical in every part of our practice, especially even from the very beginning. So faith is needed on that first step. So faith also shows up with releasing old strategies, old patterns of mind, and how, you know, you can see that they're dysfunctional, they feel painful, but yet we still hold on to them. And to release them is often scary, or is often disconcerting, disorienting. Now this kind of ties in, it's a nice segue into some of the deeper things around faith. So faith, the beginning of this transcendental origination cycle list, from faith we go into joy, from joy to rapture to concentration, from concentration to seeing things how they are, and then into some of the deeper realizations from there. But this little point here of faith is this leaping off from the other cycle of dependent origination that I spoke about last week. So dependent origination basically sums up how we create this sense of self and how we perpetuate the suffering that's part of that. Right? The sense of self and suffering are really tied from this Buddhist perspective. Right? Doesn't mean we don't need to have a healthy sense of self, a sense of self that has good esteem, self-esteem, that has a sense of navigational, be skillful in the world. But the issue is when that self is believed in an absolute way, that that's the bottom line of who and what we are. Because that sense of self is subject to change, is always arising and passing away. And the more we identify with it, the more pain we have. You can see this in ourselves, in our own lives. You know, just looking across the room here and those online, you know, there's a wide range of life experience and how long people have lived. Think back to a time in your life when you really inhabited some sense of you. Maybe you were a student. Maybe you were a mother or a father. Maybe you had a partner. Maybe you had a job. You had a role that you really liked. And what happened when those change? When the children grow up or when they pass away? You know, what happens when the relationships end and the job, you retire or the job is taken away? The more we're identified, the more pain we feel, right? So that's kind of a macro way of looking at it, since the self is this deep illusion that's always arising. And so this creates the sense of self. When we take birth in it, there's suffering that arises from that. That suffering leads to more ignorance, which then starts that cycle. So it's kind of this ongoing process. But then transcendental is like this leaping off point from dukkha, from suffering, instead of adding to it, to reinvesting it, into perpetuating it, we go into faith that maybe there's a different way of practicing, a different way of being in the world. There's this potential that calls us forth. So those of you who are on the weekend with Rodney Smith, he talked about this topic. He talked about the Heart Sutra and talked about the four foundations of mindfulness and how these two really describe this kind of really lovely intertwining of these two teachings. But one point that he made over and over again is that we often look at the world from this sense of me who's having this experience, the sense of my mind, I'm observing my mind. But we don't realize that that mind itself inherently has this assumption of self in it. That sense of self is baked into it, is enmeshed in it. And so we try to practice, we try to find the sense of self. We try to practice as a meditator. And the sense of self is leading that whole process. And then what's outside of that is awareness. Now that's a huge leap of faith. You know, if you've ever practiced and you felt that sense of maybe a little bit of fear, trepidation, or maybe outright terror, that if you find that if I let go, if that sense of self is getting a little soft, a little thin, there's a fear that sometimes arises. And that's the sense of self saying, whoa, if you really see me, then I'm going to disappear. And that's scary. That's a death to the ego. It's a death to the sense of self. So that's why that fear arises. And there's faith that, okay, that's fear is something that's actually okay to, it's safe to go through it, to move through it. I remember as a child watching a movie, science fiction movie, and someone had one side had these mental powers and would basically make this illusion of this wall of fire that was terrifying. But if you were able to just go through it, then it just disappeared. And so that's a bit like how when the fear that comes up, when that sense of self is getting thin and getting less established, when you start to sense, you're actually seeing through it. Awareness is starting to come through. There's a terror that sometimes arises. And so that's why faith is so important, to trust that you hear people talking about it, it's okay. It's actually a good thing to move through that, to actually see through that sense of self. That's the peace, the ease, the free, the awakening of the heart that we long for, that we practice for. And so in some ways, this is the biggest area of faith, because our strategies are very comfortable. You know, especially that sense of me who's having this experience. We've had it since we kind of first came into consciousness. At some point, a child goes from that unformed awareness into I'm having me this sense of me. I am not one with my mother. I am two different things. There's me and my mother. There's me who's trying to push away, say yes, say no. You know, the two-year-old exerting themselves. That's a sense of self starting to grow, and ideally grows into this healthy perspective. So it's a very deep embedded perspective that we hold. And the Buddha, when he really looked at it, when he saw, okay, Why is there so much suffering in my mind, in my heart? Why is there so much pain in my heart? And he had a pretty nice life, right? He had a life of luxury, a life of pleasure, a life sheltered from illness, from sickness, from death, from old age. And so it was a very rarefied life. But when he saw that, okay, this body too is subject to death, subject to illness, subject to old age, that shocked him in a very deep way, right? And so there's this moment of the feeling the dukkha, feeling the pain so clearly. And that's one of the things that the practice does, is allows us to feel our own pain perhaps in the most clear way we've ever felt it. Because we're all used to feeling pain. We're all used to feeling suffering. But we rarely see really the root of it, the cause of it, the heart of it. That's why the Buddha started the four noble truths with there is dukkha. Because until we actually see that dukkha, really perceive it in a deep way, we're going to be kind of putting out fires instead of seeing the heart of it, seeing the depth of that. So the Buddha saw that and he went on this quest. And what started him off was an act of faith. Of inspiration. He saw a holy person with robes practicing. And he thought, well, maybe that person understands something that I don't. And that's how we often start our practice. We hear something about meditation, hear something about the Dharma. We hear, sense the potential, and we're drawn to it. We're pulled into it a little bit. And then he saw through practice that, oh, this comes down to this sense of self. The sense of me. And when I see through that, there is a profound element of liberation. There's deeper elements that we'll explore as we go through this year in the end of the transcendental origination. So what generates faith? Where does it come from? Where does it arise from? You know, what motivates it to come? So the first piece I mentioned was really that sense of dukkha. Feeling that dukkha. Sometimes we can say it as, Rodney would sometimes say it this way, that we would run into the dead ends. We would just try every other possibility and nothing would work. We've tried those strategies over and over again. And one thing I appreciate, many things I appreciate about his teaching, but one is that he trusted people. Like sometimes I would say, okay, I really feel like it's important for me to do this kind of worldly thing in my life. And he would say, then do it. Because he knew if I didn't do it, it would still be kind of this nagging thing. Oh, if I don't do that, that actually is going to make me happy. But until I actually did it and saw that, oh yeah, that was nice, but it also comes and goes. It doesn't have that lastingness. And so there's a sense of coming into those dead ends. There was a time a few years ago that I was just had a tremendous amount of suffering in relationship to some situation. And that dukkha felt so deep that I felt like there's no other option but to be still with it. That my mind would try to have its strategies, would try to argue it or feel it or, you know, lament around it. But it was only that was left was just to feel it in a very deep way, in a profound way. Perhaps this is also echoed as someone goes through recovery process, that hitting bottom, when you realize there's nothing, life just cannot get worse than this. Because until that point, there's always these excuses, these ways we can justify or explain away. But when there's this clear seeing that this is really the bottom of it, and I'm responsible, and it's my choice, chance to come forth. Thomas Merton said something like, true prayer and love are learned in the hour when prayer becomes impossible and the heart has turned to stone. So when our strategies, normal ways of being in the world just collapse, they just don't work anymore, then we go into faith. Okay, what is there else? And that's movement into this transcendental origination, into the faith of practice. Sometimes this takes the form of the triple gem. You know, at the beginning of the year, we do the refuges and the precepts. And so the triple gem can be a profound place of faith, to think about the Buddha and his life, the way he practiced, the way he overcame, what he saw. And that becomes this inspiration for ourselves. Maybe I too can practice in this way. Maybe I too can see the Dharma with all its beautiful lists. Sometimes we read some teachings and say, okay, that really describes my mind. It describes, helps me see the nature of my own suffering and the way through it in a profound way. And of course, Sangha. You know, Sangha is such a essential part of our practice. Because I think if we were just practicing in isolation, we would easily be discouraged. Would you easily give up? But for practicing with community, with other people, they hold us together. They help us practice. You see this on residential retreats. You're coming into the hall and you're like, okay, I'm tired. My mind is busy. But then you see all these other people practicing and you want to be part of that. You're inspired by their practice. We feel that in this way every Monday night, every time you sit within Sangha. Reflect that everyone else is practicing too. And when we have chance for discussions, how that inspires you, hearing other people's journey and what they've seen. There's the inspiration and the sense of faith that comes, that the teacher can lend to you. The Buddha said this, that if it was impossible, I wouldn't ask you to do it. And that's to really take that in when you're feeling this doubt. So doubt is kind of the opposite of faith in some ways, as is fear. But there's a sense of opposite of our doubt is this sense of faith. That the Buddha said, I would not ask you to do it if it wasn't possible. Right? So realizing sometimes that's what a teacher does for you. He or they sees the potential in you, sees something that you don't see. You know, they see your capacity. Sometimes they see the beginning of awakening, the seeing of the loosening of your mind, loosening of your constrictions. And they highlight that. They help you see that. They bring that forth to you. And this is one of the gifts from the time of the Buddha, from the Buddha's time to all the teachers since then. You know, people who've been practicing for a while can do that. We do that for ourselves. When we hear for each other, when we hear each other and listen to each other deeply, holding each other in our hearts. So the process of faith and how it deepens, Sharon Salzberg wrote a beautiful book called Faith. So if you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to check it out. Do we have a copy in the library? Okay, one of the few books we don't have in our library. We have a library now if you want to check out a book. So she had different aspects of this process of faith, and this I think this is a really helpful piece. The first part was this, what she called bright faith. Okay, bright faith. It's kind of like falling in love with the Dharma, maybe falling in love with the teacher and how they're representing the Dharma. And this is, I think many of us start that way. There's a sense of like, oh, I just am so drawn to it. And there's something that kind of catches our ear, catches our heart comes alive. That's what caught my first inclination of the Dharma. I was practicing because I had a cassette tape series on insight meditation that my father had sent me, and I was practicing. It was in the midst of a painful relationship dissolving, and it was painful that the relationship was dissolving, I should say, that way. And life just felt like everything was falling apart. And then I heard this teaching, this potential of looking at this pain, this suffering in a different way, to actually see some of the suffering was caused by my relationship to it, not by the suffering itself. And that really shocked me, because until that point, I thought it's the circumstances of life that's causing my happiness or my suffering. The right circumstances, the right manifestation of me, the right way I'm being, I'll be happy. The wrong one, I'm going to feel pain. I'm going to feel suffering. And so I was really at a victim of these worldly winds of praise and blame and gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and disrepute. They would just blow and I would feel that pain. But to hear that teaching that, okay, it's the way that you're relating to experience is what's causing suffering. It became this place of this potential, this act of this drawing, calling forth the faith that I want to understand that. And that's when you start to feel faith really moves through you, where you really want to understand it. And ideally, as you listen to the Dharma in whatever context or arena, it should kind of have this onward leading quality. It's like, I want to understand that. I want to see that for myself. I may not understand it right now, but there's this potential. There's this potential for knowing. You know, if you went on the weekend, Ronnie was talking about some very sublime qualities, right? These beautiful qualities of stillness, of emptiness, but in a way that hopefully was drawing us forth. And that sense of drawing forth is this act of faith. And this is often has a bright quality. There's kind of an energy to it. Sometimes you can be so impassioned by it, like everything is the Dharma. It's so important. Everything I want to see in my life has to do with the Dharma. But it just like falling in love, there's that early excitement and energy around it. But, you know, I don't think my wife's listening, but that energy doesn't stay forever, right? It changes to something else. Something that's more sustainable, that's actually more, in some ways, much more deep. Because it's not based on our fantasy or idea. It's based on reality. It's based on history and experience. Being with someone for a long time. And so this is why Sharon talks about verifying faith. So faith that's actually not something that you're believing in, but faith that's actually based on your direct experience. And that's one of the most powerful things about our meditation practice, because it gives us the potential to verify our faith, to actually see for ourselves. So if a teaching touches you, see it for yourself. If it's only something you can only access when you're in a cave with no one around, you know, it has value, but it has maybe a limited value. I'm always curious, how does it show up in the grit of my life, in the dust and dirt and mess of my life? How does the practice show up there? And how do I see things in a different way? How do I practice? And this is the power of our meditation, is we learn to clean up our quality of seeing, to see things without distortion in a more clear, direct way. And the more clearly we see it, the very seeing itself starts to transform us. We can't help but be transformed. And this is becoming this verified faith. Now, faith often does have, it's a little bit like the hero's journey, that there is this obstacles. Maybe we have disillusionment. We have a crisis of faith. We lose faith. And some of this is as like seeing a teacher and we put them up on a pedestal and you realize, oh, actually this person I thought was a god or a goddess is actually a human being, right? And that can be shaking. You know, it can be throw us off until we start to see, okay, there's this wholeness of the human being. You know, that there's conscious parts and there's unconscious, skillful parts and unskillful parts. And also in ourselves. And so this is kind of the crisis of faith. And eventually it comes into this abiding faith. And this is through our deep knowing, our deep seeing. This is the Buddha saying, come see for yourself. See in a direct, clear way. And that's what transcendental origination is about, is seeing clearly and seeing in a more and more clear way. That's one of the key pieces after we go through concentration, is seeing things how they actually are. And from that place of seeing, then we go into dispassion from that, and there's a sense of a final seeing the deeper roots of things. So faith, even though it's a word we don't use very much, is still integral to our practice. You know, faith that, okay, each time I come to sit, it's worth it. It's worth my time. It's worth my energy. there's a faith as we see how it changes in our lives. It starts to confirm that. It starts to verify our trust in it. Because faith and trust are very connected. The trust that this is worthwhile to practice into. And we see it through our suffering. This choice, the suffering has this cycle that perpetuates. And there's faith that maybe there's another way. Maybe the Buddha knew what he was talking about. Maybe all these practitioners for these 2,600 years were on the right track. Maybe I can follow in their footsteps. All right, let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, letting those words settle. And then we'll have some space for some questions or sharing. Yes, thank you, Suze. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Tim. I wanted to share an experience of how my faith went from just the confidence in the practice. So 8 years ago, when my partner died really suddenly, and my world kind of flipped upside down, I reached out to one of my Dharma teachers, and she gave me this phrase, which has become a mantra for my life ever since, and it's kind of morphed, but it's, may I trust in the natural unfolding of life. And then I've added, and may I receive that unfolding with wisdom and understanding. And what it did for me is that in addition to the practice, there was something about life is going to unfold as it is. There's a natural unfolding. And instead of, and the faith is, both trusting that that it's just going to continue happening, and that I'm going to be able to meet it. So there was both an inner and an outer. And I shared that once with another Dharma teacher, and she didn't think it was a really good idea. So I, which was fine because it wasn't for her anyway. It's been helpful to me. But I wondered how you thought about also that, you know, spreading out that sense of faith in terms of just how life shows up.
You know, I think it's a, I think there's a way that in our practice, you know, there's always pluses and minuses to our practice. And especially as a meditation practitioner, we sometimes get so used to meeting each moment and trying to be skillful with it. And there's something to be said that only takes us so far. At some point, there's a sense of surrendering. Or a sense of relaxing, or that sense of trust. That, you know, I think some of the faith-based traditions, you know, they kind of lead with that. It's like, okay, I'm going to just let go and trust that, you know, God or whatever is going to be there and support. There's kind of a trusting in the process. Well, maybe as a meditator, I have to be more skillful, you know, do this the right way. But at some point, that strategy itself doesn't work anymore. You can see that's too noisy. And then and that quality of it's such a hard quality to come forth, right? That everything has this unfolding of its own way. I mean, as I talk about it, it sounds like equanimity, this kind of heart-imbued equanimity. That's seeing, okay, there's sorrow here, there's sadness here, there's joy here, and there's this natural unfolding, this trusting of that. Like that poem I read that, the last line that, yes, it's like, and sometimes you sense how faithfully your life is delivered, even though you can't read the address. Yeah, so, and just to kind of circle back to, you know, the teacher giving you that gift, another teacher saying, oh, I don't know if that's good. You also start to learn to resonate, what trust your own resonate, what resonates with you, what connects with you. And that's an important piece. And, you know, a teacher, it's good to hear the feedback and kind of get that. But sometimes teachers are off, right? They hear, they react to something. But if it resonates with you and it feels like it's onward leading, it gives to a place of ease, it helps you feel connected to yourself and others, then that's good teaching.
Another thing that has happened, I think, as a result of that, is that when life unfolds in ways that are troubling, I don't necessarily call it a problem. I mean, I have to relate to it. I have to, you know, and I have agency. But there's a little bit more acceptance for things that show up that aren't pleasant.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, isn't that just a good way of being in the world? Like if we, okay, this is a really big deal. It's a horrible versus, okay, this is how the situation is. This is what we're going to deal with it. We're going to meet it. Yeah, thank you, Suze. All right, go ahead, Mariah.
Good evening. Thank you for that lovely talk, Tim. I have a question about transcendental origination in terms of the path. So is that where you see clearly, and then once you see clearly, you can see the roots of the suffering, and then the suffering passes away, potentially over time. And faith intensifies over that time. And then as more of those roots are let go, self lets go, and then I guess the next phase is then even more letting go of self. Is that kind of where it fits in terms of the path?
Yes, but a little bit of refinement around that, I would say. We'll get into that later in the year. But basically, the key piece you talked about, the seeing things how they are, it's like one analogy we could say that there's these deep roots of fire that are burning. Right, coals that are buried in the earth. I remember when I used to fight fire for the Forest Service, we put this fire out. We thought it was done. And 2 weeks later, wind came and an ember, you know, the coals were unseen and they started a whole new fire. You know, so we had to go back and redo it. And so it's like seeing things how they are is actually seeing where the fire actually is, where the coals are, where the hot spots are. And that in itself is takes a while to see that. Part of that is a sense of self. And that's one of the big coals that we see is that sense of identity, that sense of inherent separation. So I would say I may have a different answer when we get to that part of the year, but right now that's how I'm holding it, is that we see the sense of self is we see it more clearly. Okay. The piece about the next section is the dispassion, right? Because those we can see it, but it can still have a lot of drive. You know, there's basically three kleshas or three unwholesome roots of greed, hatred, and delusion still have these powers that move through us. We see them, but we still kind of act from them. They still arise. And we still sometimes get really engaged in them, right? And so dispassion is we start to lose the grip in it, we start to lose the energy for that. And that's also a deeper loosening of that sense of self. We start to see that sense of self really, it just starts to fall away. There's not the energy to keep rebirthing it ourselves, right? And then even the deeper levels is when there still can be the arising, but there's the deeper seeing that that's actually gone. It's actually, it doesn't arise anymore. Those fires are completely out. The sense of self just does not come back. Because for many of us, the sense of self can fall away, and yet it kind of re-engages, right? Like Ram Dass, I think, said, if you think you're enlightened, go spend some time with your in-laws. You know, it kind of brings everything back. You know, we could have our own version of that. You know, go watch the news, and we see, you know, everything comes back. Right, so there's kind of this kind of in between. We're seeing clearly, but we're also still really caught in the web. Does that kind of help a little bit with that?
Yes, that helps a lot. Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense. And then with this, the loss of sense of self, there would be more emptiness. But there's a lot of things going on that would reinforce that sense of self, is what you're describing.
Yes. Yeah, it's like the seeing through the sense of self is a kind of a critical part of our practice, because until that point, there's still this that's kind of our default, is to see through that sense of self. When we actually see through it, it's not never believed in the same way. There's times we forget, but we don't forget forever. You know, we come back and realize that. And I think, you know, to be honest, I'm less familiar with the transcendental origination than dependent origination. I'm very familiar with that cycle. But this one, you know, I'm also learning along with us. Is okay, what's, and those later stages, I think, actually move to full awakening. You know, so there's the first level awakening, the four levels. The first level is the anatta, seeing through that sense of self in a deep, profound way. Thank you, Mariah. All right, what else?
Thanks, Tim, again for the great Dharma talk as usual. I have a bit of a question. I think this is kind of sparked by the weekend retreat. I think what the weekend retreat really taught me is this like, I don't know, doing like, I don't know, meditation, just really getting a really, I don't know, just a really deep, profound Dharma talk really, I think, changed the way I saw things. Like, I can just see things like more clearly. Like, you know, I can notice my room rather than like being stuck in a bunch of negative thought loops. But I think usually when I meditate, it's like I don't really have, I guess, the faith to really just like sit down, because like my mind's so noisy. There's like so many things going on today, and I'm just maybe feeling really down. So I don't know, what is, like, I guess, is there like a specific way, like, I don't know, you kind of stay faithful to it and really like it, like maybe a better way to ask this is like, is there like a pre-meditation, like, you know, faith, like routine to kind of make yourself feel like getting into the status and really replicate kind of the sort of effects of like really that long, like day long retreat in your, you know, daily meditation routine, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it varies a bit based on each person and each, you know, different phases in people's practice and also just their day. But I would say a couple of thoughts around that. One is, I'll give you the first one first. hindrances, you know, kind of noticing the presence of the hindrances can be helpful. So sometimes when we talked about concentration, sometimes we think, okay, I've got to be focused. But unless we notice that the hindrance is there, they tend to kind of undercut the process. So you're sitting down, you might just say, okay, what's this mind and body doing? What's going on here? Okay, I'm agitated. Okay, that's kind of aversion. Okay, I'm really looking forward to something. Okay, that's craving. Maybe there's a sense of sleepiness or restlessness. There's doubt. So you kind of, by that, doing that, you're stepping into observing that state instead of being lost in it, right? So maybe working with it a little bit, breathing a little deeper, opening, if there's more of that kind of excess energy, you know, of agitation, of aversion, of restlessness and worry, maybe opening the eyes, taking in maybe nature around you a little bit, kind of calm the system down. If the system's kind of dull, doubt, sloth and torpor, you know, maybe standing up for a little bit. So you can kind of do those. Those are kind of more practical ways. But to go back to kind of the heart of your question is, how do you kind of duplicate the depth of retreat in a daily practice?
Yeah.
So I would actually suggest bringing forth investigation into that. So investigation is this, it's not an intellectual process. It's much more of a directed seeing the nature of things in a more clear way. So using your example that your mind just kind of going out, chewing on something. And it's okay, that seems to be in opposition to the stillness I want. So investigation turns toward that churning mind and saying, okay, how is this benefiting me? What's really the payoff? Right? So there's the payoff of trying to figure it out. So we have to not take the first right answer, not the superficial answer of trying to solve this argument, you know, talking, having the argument over and over in ourselves. We start to notice, what is the deeper element of that? And often it points to, we feel like me. When you're angry, worried, you're really in the center of that. So it kind of brings that forth. So an investigation starts to see that. And then that comes into this space of faith, because to really step out of that, there's a leap of faith into the stillness. Because there's a leap of faith that I don't have to be always self-defined through my thoughts, through my worries, that I can actually trust that there's another way of being in this world. And so that's where that investigation kind of pinpoints where the rub is, and faith is the act of courage of releasing it.
Great. So it's kind of like thinking whether these extra thoughts are really necessary, and that kind of like slows you down so you can, you know, meditate longer and kind of, you know, maybe kind of, I don't know, like simulate like a retreat. Because I would notice I usually do like maybe 10, 20 minutes, and then I just feel like I really need to go back and continue my work. But yeah.
So that after that 10 or 20 minutes, when you start to feel that urge, so think of that as it's like you're kind of getting deeper and something in you wants to kind of get re-engaged.
Right.
Right. So what if I don't stay engaged? If I become unengaged, less defined? And so that's kind of that piece there. And also sometimes just, you know, sometimes it's just having a more scaffolding of your meditation. It's like, okay, the mind's doing all this stuff. Okay, breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. You know, something that points to your experience, like a noting technique or that Thich Nhat Hanh method of saying that. That brings a lot of scaffolding to it.
Mm. Awesome. And then you said, like, kind of to your first point, like, kind of mentioned my first point was kind of like, even before you meditate, you can kind of notice, like, what's, like, hindering you. And that just, like, noticing, like, maybe, like, while I'm on the desk with the computer, I could just notice what's stopping me from meditating. And, like, as I kind of notice, then I slowly realize, oh, maybe it's time to just meditate. And then you kind of walk to the cushion and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So it does take a little bit of grit, a little bit of perseverance, because it's, it often feels like it's really impossible to sit still. It's like, I can't do it. And but the more you do it, actually, the more you trust it. Yeah, so what I would say is just say to yourself, it's not optional.
For sure.
You know, it's like, okay, every day I'm going to practice at this time. It doesn't matter if I'm sick. It doesn't matter if I'm throwing up. It doesn't matter if it's snowing. I'm going to sit, right? And then and see what happens by doing that.
Great. Awesome. Thanks so much for the detailed explanation.
You're very welcome. Thanks for your question. All right, Sherry.
Thanks. Thanks so much for this talk, Tim. I have the feeling I'm definitely one of those people who resists the word faith. As soon as it came up early on, I was like, what do I do with that? And one of the things that I'm really feeling into is like, is that I'm here and what's bringing me here. And that is not necessarily something that's really written or very clearly defined. And so the unknowingness of that is perhaps something that you could call faith. And I'm also thinking about how much I don't know. And it feels like a new version of ignorance, you know, where the ignorance that starts the dependent origination sequence might be more like the kind of ignorance of a person who thinks they know everything but really doesn't. That the kind of ignorance that one might begin this sequence with is the one where you, I know I don't know, but I don't know. I can't really know what I don't know yet, but I know that I don't know. And so there's a kind of it's both like an openness and an adherence at the same time. It's very hard to talk about. I really appreciate your working so hard to bring this very ineffable kind of discussion or the topic to us in a more clear discussion. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. So you said that you gave that pairing, you said it was both the unknown and also unhearing. Was it A or something?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I said openness and adhering. Adhering. So it's sort of paradoxical, but like here I am sitting at the practice again. I don't, I have this idea, there's this promise of where the practice will take me. And so I have to both adhere to it and also be completely open to that I don't know anything about it.
Yes, okay. Yes, thank you. I just didn't quite hear that word. Yeah, so I think, something like faith, like I kind of rebel against that word too. If Sim says we're about faith, I'd be like, probably not here. But as you talk about it, think of it as that potential, that sense of onward. Okay, I don't. There's that unknown that's drawing you forth, and I think you're absolutely right about the ignorance. That's a wise ignorance. That's more resting in the unknown versus the ignorance of confusion or sometimes of mistaking what's true to not what's not true as being true. And that's what ties us to that suffering. But that sense of yeah, I don't know. I'm that, and yet there's something that's pulling us forth into the path. And yeah, there's a kind of adhering to it or that sense of commitment to it. There's also this openness to where that path might be. So it's basic. Yeah, I think that's a better way of framing this word faith is more of that something that's onward leading, that's drawing you forth. You don't know where you're going, but you know there's something that wants you want to walk that way. You want to go that way. Yeah, all these words, it's helpful. If one word sticks and kind of like sticks in your throat and your heart, and we can translate it. Like the Satipatthana Sutta, I remember in my teacher training, we were studying it, and I went through and found like, and I probably eight different translations of a key phrase in it. And each one of them had a different way, a different nuance to it. So what we're saying, this it's not what the Buddha's saying, it's what people codified and wrote down, and then what trans people translated. So, there's also the truth in it that we all have to discover. All right, anyone else have anything else they'd like to ask or share? All right, so we got Adam, we got two behind you.
Hello, Tim. Thank you for your Dharma talk tonight. I wanted to touch on the feeling of losing, like in the beginning, feeling like there's like a loss, right, with like the ego, and feeling like, all these things that I may have enjoyed or like thought of as like joyful and like bringing to that sense of self, and just kind of like watching them wash away so quickly can become, there can be fear that I guess comes from that for me. And then like, but also being okay with it, just like watching it, watching even the fear, right? And yeah, and I guess for me, that's where like faith is kind of coming in, is just like feeling this like washing away of what I thought of where myself was at, and then still like moving through it, right? And just letting it continue to be, so. I don't know if I have a question there, but
Oh, yeah,
just thoughts.
that's a nice sharing, and it's a part of the practice we don't always highlight because it kind of it can be a little discouraging to hear about it. But yeah, we start to practice it. If we don't talk about it, then it can be discouraging. But the way you talked about it, it's a lovely way of seeing the things that I used to have passion for, that used to really bring a lot of joy. There's kind of a dispassion that's happening, not because I'm thinking I should be a good Buddhist to not feel happiness anymore, or whatever distortion that might be. It doesn't pull us in the same way. And I think what's happening is that sense of self often is so inherent in some of those pleasures thinking or those experiences. They're kind of a part of it. It's like I'm a happy sense of me because I'm doing this activity. And we start to see that sense of me falls away, or is not seen through, the activity starts to change its meaning. But this is a transitional piece. At some point, there's a different way of inhabiting life, inhabiting of things without it being so self-focused. And then actually that's much more free because you realize, okay, I can enjoy this, but it, you know, I'm not tied to it. Like, you know, like Suze was talking about with that sense of the unfolding of life. And so that's, sometimes there's this kind of limbo place that's kind of a little rough until something else is moving us forth. And that's, and there's a faith in that. There's a faith that this is happening in the way it needs to. Yeah. All right, for Marie, was your hand up? No? I thought your hand was up.
I can have it up. Hi, everyone. What I was thinking, I guess, my hand self-volunteered, was that... I don't know, if you would have asked me if I am a faith person or if that word means something to me throughout my life, I would have said, who are you talking to? But as I've seen the relief from suffering, unconscious suffering, I can't imagine not saying out loud to the world, I'm a devotional, faithful being, just because of the transformation that the path has opened. So I guess that's what I was raising my hand about.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it's like that, our relationship to, yeah, to faith and understanding what that word means. It does transform, and the more we see clearly, the more it starts to onward lead. We realize, okay, there's actually more and more. And so it becomes this, that's why this transcendental origination, I was talking to someone via email about this. Dependent origination is like this kind of closed loop of selfing and suffering. Transcendental dependent origination is this leaping off place. And it goes to these very deep places. And I just want to also acknowledge Fern Marie Rodriguez is on the four-year teacher training. So she's being trained to become a residential retreat teacher through IMS and Spirit Rock. So thank you for joining us. And we'll try to have her show up more and offer some teachings here in the near future. All right, anyone else?
I really resonated with what Suze had to say about trusting the unfolding of life. And I try to live in a similar way with a similar sentiment, kind of along the lines of what you were talking about, Marie. I tend to rely on that verified faith.
Yes.
I've had some really dark times in my own life. And something that I've told myself that has helped me got through a lot of those times is just telling myself that no matter how difficult or dark things get, that everything will turn out okay. Mm-hmm. And then there's a part of me that tenses up with that thought and asks, well, how do you know? And then my brain's automatic response is, well, when has it not? I've come through on the other side. Every time I'm still here, it's never not turned out okay. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I kind of like to repeat to myself.
Nice.
And in a similar vein, just within the practice itself, I know within myself, I've seen experientially the lack of self and the truth of dukkha being in my relation to suffering and not the suffering itself. And every now and again, I ask myself, why am I not further along in the practice? Why am I not closer to being awakened? And then I just kind of fall back on just that one, that faith in that continuing the practice will, just keeping up with it, will help me get closer there. And also just relying on that verified faith that I have seen these truths. And maybe if I want to be somewhere further along than I am right now, that doesn't matter as much as just knowing that those truths are in fact true. And if I keep working, then maybe they'll feel true more constantly than just in minute experiences. Yeah. But.
Great. Thank you for sharing all that. Yeah. The sense of I'm going to get through this okay. You know, there's difficult times in my life. It's like the definition of okay changes. And sometimes something that the end piece of it sometimes leads to these things I would never have gone through, or these things would never arisen from that. That so even some of the difficult things, you start to trust that, okay, that I didn't want to go that pathway, but it led to this thing that was really beneficial for me to go through, even though it was hell going getting there.
Right.
So that's part of that okay, it's going to work out the way it should. And that actually, yeah, ties back into what you're saying about that, the potential. And this is one piece I didn't talk about directly, but the ultimate sense of faith is like we can't make ourselves awakened. We can't force it. We can't work really hard and have this thing pop out at the end. And if we try that way, you know, we can get a certain place, certain distance on the path. But at some point, that strategy itself starts to implode and back up on us.
Right.
And there's this, you know, it's almost like one teacher talked about, you go to the door and you knock on the door and then you have to just relax and let it open on its own. And that's the deep quality of faith.
Right.
Because we want to be, okay, I want to get enlightened. I want to let go of myself. But if that's just like we're holding on, each time we try to let go, it grabs on. And then finally, something lets go. Like some people talk about it as awakening is like sitting underneath a tree and a fruit falls when it's ripe. And it's outside of our will. So this is an interesting territory we've explored this in the ox herding pictures a few years ago. And this kind of is a different way of presenting all that. Great. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, that really resonates. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, did I see another hand over here? Yes, I thought I saw Leslie.
I guess what was striking me listening to people and talking about the practice and you know, being, for lack of a better word, religious about, you know, daily practice and that sort of thing. Mm. What ends up happening, I think, for me sometimes is I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
And you just address that really well. I think it's like it's not about getting there; it's about being here. And she's like, "Oh,
yeah.
But if I don't know if there's more to speak to about that whole sort of it's part of our culture of goal oriented and good. You know,
yeah.
I'm gonna be enlightened tomorrow.
Have your goals, seven yeah. steps to enlightenment. Yeah.
Yeah, can I get that online? You know, I mean, yeah. So I don't know if there's more to say about that, but it was just.
Well, to frame it, there's lots of things we could say about it, but to frame it from the perspective of faith is that strategy is really baked into us, as you said. You know, it's like we're taught early on, okay, make your to-do list and get through it and do this and, you know, all these good things will happen. But it's like and we apply it naturally in our practice, you know, because that's, but there's an act of faith to release it, to not follow that, to be being in the present moment in a full, complete way is a tremendous act of faith. To let, okay, I'm going to let whatever happens, happens. I'm going to be with it. I have a trust that I can be with it. And it's going to unfold at its own pace, its own timing, in its own way.
Beautiful, actually.
Yeah, if we stop fighting it and we relax with it, it's very beautiful. It's very wonderful. All right. right. So with that, we'll call that a night. So thank you all for your engagement, your questions, and sharing. Next week, Tuareg Salah will be teaching. She'll be online, but we'll be meeting here in person, or you can join online, whatever you're drawn to. And Steve Wilhelm will be doing the kind of the host role to kind of structure the questions here in the room. All right, so enjoy her talk, and I think it's going to be an exciting one. I think we'll probably have a lot to say about faith, my guess. I think she resonates with that word in a very strong way. All right, and may you be well. May you have faith.